Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to The Naked Englishman. I'm Richard Vobes. This is the audio diary of my life. Just going in to turn the internet on so you can all access the internet. little joke there that you've heard so many times. This is now perhaps not so funny. Not so funny after so many millions of times, but there you go. It is the 23rd today and of April. It's 20 to 8 in the morning, a bit late this morning, but not to worry. It rained all night. Woke up in the middle of the night at the end of a circadian thingy, you know, came downstairs, did 20 minute meditation, and then went back to bed. Garden seems to be a bit flooded. I don't want to get my slippers wet, and I think the dustbin men will be coming tomorrow, so I must put the dustbin out tomorrow, and I'm not really sure which one it is, but I imagine it must be recycling, because that one is filling up. Good thing about the rain, from my point of view, is it does, when I leave cardboard boxes out to go into recycling, when they get wet, they're easier to crush up and dispose of, or to put into the recycling, which is what I'm doing now. Just seen these cardboard boxes, they've got soaked through, and there does seem to be some blue sky immediately above me, which is rather handy. These other boxes are not quite wet enough, but these are wet enough to go in the recycling. So I'm just going to do that. Oh, I've got to navigate, bear with me, whilst I just nip across here. Another little job done, and I'll get that out tonight. Does it seem to? Oh, there's another. One more box. Might as well crush these. Every time we go to the farm shop, which we are going to go today, because we shall be disappearing tomorrow, so service may not happen quite so rigorously as it is. Oh, there's a couple more boxes here. I hadn't noticed these. Plastic bags, boxes, soaking wet these, absolutely drenched. But that's okay, because they could go in the recycling. Ooh, that's very slimy, that one. Bear with me, viewer. There we go. There isn't much room in there now with all those cardboard boxes, but I'm very pleased. And I just do that deliberately, leave them out there. Right, just wash my hands, because that was a bit slimy on the bottom of that one. Last one. So yes, yesterday, very exciting. Well, for me anyway, finished the book. Finished the second draft. Well, I say finished it. There is I'm describing the situation as a book, as an aeroplane ride. So at the beginning, you've got getting on the plane, you know, setting up the story. You've got the takeoff, which is the sort of the real, oh, here's the crux of the matter. You've got the plane journey, which is kind of the middle section where the story unfolds. And then, sorry, just going into the bathroom here. Then you've got the landing and touchdown, where everything sort of comes together. And then, once everything comes together, the book's over, really. But it's not quite over, because you kind of need that little "and they lived happily ever after" type touch, or maybe they didn't live happily ever after, whatever the consequences of the whole story is, which is really the taxiing to the airport bit, the terminus. And so I suppose, so I haven't written that bit, the taxiing to the, because I want to be able to sit now, print off the book, which I have ordered. I've ordered two copies, one for Julia, one for me, and we will respectively take those away, read them with a red pen, and all the errors, we will mark them up. And then, but also at the same time, reading it all the way through as a book, will help me then go, oh yeah, in this taxiing up, here are a few loose ends. Because inevitably there'll be a few loose ends that need to be addressed that I may have overlooked. And in that last little bit, it's very important to tie up all those loose ends. So as I'm reading the book, it will do that. The other thing is I've ordered hardback versions. Two reasons. One reason is a hardback is easier to work on in terms of carrying it around, and it'll last a bit longer as you're putting it in your bag and, you know, reading it in different places. So, I mean, you know, the aim is not to be sat at the computer, so you can read it as a purchaser of the book will read it. That's really the aim. The other reason is I want to see what the quality's like as a hardback, how big it is, how full it is, whether I've got the text right for the page and all those things, and tweak what needs to be tweaked. So, you know, not being a publisher full time, one can't do that. One doesn't have that knowledge. So it's like, it's a test. What does a hard book look like? And how much does it cost for the 350 pages or whatever it is that the book is? There's all that, but it's very exciting. And then once we've gone through that process, all the adjustments will be made, the final version will be put together, and then it's a couple of paperback versions will be done for a couple of people who say they'd love to proofread it, because even though we've done it, it would somebody else outside who doesn't know the story and what have you can proofread it, and also tell us whether it bloody makes sense or not. Whether they agree with the story is a different matter, but whether it makes sense, whether they understood it, that's a very important part. And then having got to that stage, if there's no final, well, then whatever adjustments will be made on that, then there will be the first editions. And the first editions obviously will go to those who want to buy it. And then if they spot things or get feedback from it, it can still, the master document can still be changed. That's one good thing about publishing yourself. There are many good things about publishing yourself. I mean, there are disadvantages, of course, just like there are advantages. And that advantage, sorry, I'm washing up the dishes. That advantage is that as you get feedback, you can decide whether to take any notice of it or not. And if you do and you think, well, actually, that's a very good point, or I've got that wrong, or that's technically incorrect, or whatever it is, you can adjust it, and the next sales, nobody knows that you've changed the document, because I'll be printing on demand myself and offering them out at events and directly from my website and what have you. So my next task is to get a decent cover, because I haven't got the cover yet, and the cover can change. That's another good thing, and the title can change. I know if you do it on Amazon, you're buggered, because if you do it on Amazon and you think actually that title is not right, you have to effectively release a whole new book. I mean, it's the same text, but you've had to sort of put it as a whole new book. Well, I'm not worried about that, because I will be doing it myself. I'm not trying to get the book into bookshops, and it won't be sitting on Amazon. Certainly not initially. It may go onto Amazon, you know, a year down the line, when I've done all the initial first point of sales and talks and things and all of that. And then it might just go on there. If Amazon would accept it, they may say no, that what you're talking about is too near the knuckle. They may say it's misinformation. I don't know. Things may have changed. The history of the world may have changed by then. There's so much revelations going on at the moment. And so many things are coming out of the woodwork, which is fantastic. We may be in a much more open world in a year's time, or we may all be poisoned in our beds, who knows. So there's no point speculating, but assuming everything goes, and there may be no need for the book. So that's the situation with that, and it's I hope a few people buy it, because it's taken 6 months to write. By the time it's published, it'll be 7 or 8 months, something like that. And people will probably read it relatively quickly, because it's not a work of great literary. It's not a great literary piece. It's a story with ideas and truth. What I consider to be truth bombs in it, but others may say, well, that's rubbish. It challenges some things that even the common law people may find difficult. Of course, it challenges what's ordinary, everyday sleeping people may believe. And it paints a picture for a future. Perhaps it's a bit idyllic, but if you have a target, if we get anywhere near that sort of thing, that would be great. And of course, it's only my ideas, and they may not be warranted at all. I may be barking completely up the wrong tree, in which case it doesn't really matter. It's a fiction story. I'm not making demands that this happens as much as I may desire it. So there you go. Sorry about the washing up sounds. Oh, got to blow my hooter. So that's that. So that's nice to get to that point. But we're still probably a month away from it being available to the public, because of all those other stages it's got to go. So it takes about 8 or 9 days for these proof copies to come back. But that'll be good when they do. When they do. Yesterday, Julia brought some food round, which was delicious. Meals on Wheels for the old gaffer. And we watched an old episode of Jeremy Brett as Sherlock Holmes. And I was watching, obviously I was watching it, but one of the things that I really like about that particular production, and all, well, you know, productions of that type of ilk, particularly of the Victorian era, so I'm just moving stuff, is the costumes that they wear. And Sherlock Holmes, Dr. Watson, and many of the others, beautiful jackets, beautiful attire that they wear. And I just thought how elegant it is to be able to dress in an everyday, and it might be tiresome, but it was very elegant that people wore such beautiful outfits. Of course, it depended on your amount of money that you had, but people still had style, even if they didn't have a lot of money, because you didn't have T-shirts, and you didn't have hoodies and cargo trousers back in the Victorian period. You may have had jackets and waistcoats and trousers that were threadbare and falling to bits, but you still had a sort of style, even if they were, as I say, threadbare. And that was really, you know, nice. Listen, I think it's nice. Whereas the clothes that people wear today are just, they're devoid of character. They just, to me, anyway, and again, this is just my ideas, of course, but they look sloppy. They look untidy. They look too loose. And there's no sense of dignity. And you may say, Richard, you're talking out your hat. But I do, and maybe I am. And doesn't matter, does it? This is what one's allowed to do these days, is to talk out of one's hat. And of course, people wore hats. That's the other thing. And it was lovely watching Sherlock Holmes with his top hat, wearing his top hat. And I was thinking, top man for wearing a top hat. And I love all that. I think it's great, and I wish we were in those days today. But unfortunately, we're not. So, but that was, I thought that was very nice and elegant and worthy of mention in today's episode. I am coming to the end of my tobacco that I have here. The last sort of week and a bit, I've had, I was smoking Sutliff's Black Velvet, which is quite a heavily topped, and I don't know whether it's fermented as well, but it's heavily induced thing with flavouring, which does make it, it's Black Cavendish with what feels like dark chocolate. I don't know whether dark chocolate's in it, because there is one called chocolate or dark chocolate or something. But this one, yeah, and it was very luxurious, I suppose, creamy. Luxurious, but creamy as opposed to soapy. And I couldn't smoke it all the time. And then at the same time, I thought, well, I can't smoke that. So I'd opened a tin of Connoisseur's Choice, which I think is a little... I think it might have a tiny bit of aromatics in it, but it was much more like an English blend, as far as I can work out what English blends are. But it was more... what would you say? I suppose if one is sweet, the other is sour, if that makes some sense in terms of tobacco. And I guess it's like lager and cider. Lager's horrible. Cider and real ale. It's like one was real ale and one was cider. And what I've did as I came to the end of both of these is I've mixed them. Admittedly, the Black Cavendish one is there's more of. But the Connoisseur's one, the slightly sour one, let's just say, has brought it right down. And I thought, well, it's actually turned out to be a really lovely mixture. For those of you who are connoisseurs, at first I always thought, why are you mixing two sets of mixtures together? Because that must make such a weird combination. But actually, people do that a lot. So I'm just lighting my corn cob that the lovely Julia gave me, which is delightful. Hello, lovely Julia.
Hello, lovely Richard.
Just having a good old puff this morning.
Hope everyone is in fine fettle.
We're all in good fine fettle. Are you in good fine fettle?
Yeah. I'm good.
So we're off to the farm shop this morning. And then tomorrow we've got a bit of a long drive. So just before I go... Now I've got my pipe going. I was sent a book. Another one. And this one is called... It might be a bit out of my reach, really, but... It's called Hermes Runs the Game. And the subtext is Inverted Myth Sacrifice and Initiation Informing the Events of 2020 to 2024 by Stephen Grimmie. And so it takes... it looks at the COVID period and what was going on and what was going on behind the scenes, but it also parallels it, I think, from what I can see, with the Greek, I think he's Greek, Hermes, the god of whatever Hermes was, the god of it says here, I'll read this bit to you, I'll smoke this in a minute. This is right at the beginning. On the 5th of May 2020, he is an American, by the way, so bear in mind this has come from America, but on the 5th of May 2020, the north node of the moon moved into the sign of Gemini to traverse the astrological sign until January of 2022. That entrance occurred a few weeks after the lockdowns and shutdowns of a supposedly bad, deadly viral pandemic, which proceeded to express simultaneously globally. For just 2 weeks, we were told, until we flatten the COVID-19 curve, that began the onslaught of terminology toted on the telegraph lines of Hermes, ruler of Gemini, the lord of language, brought to us to dominate the newscape and dominate us through it. And he talks of that language, of he goes on here about all the different words that we were using at that time, social distancing, contact tracing, PCR testing, comorbidity, coronavirus, antigen, asymptomatic, herd immunity, medical lockdown, viral shedding, carbon graphene nanobots. There's loads here. Droplet transmission, N95 respirators, swab test, self-isolation, quarantine for the healthy, anal swab test, pre-symptomatic, hydrochloroquine, remdesivir, ivermectin, you know, all these sort of drugs that have come into the dexamethasone. And then all the acronyms, mRNA, SARS, WHO, WEF, CDC, all these sort of things. Fascinating. There's more. Anyway, he goes on about what happened there and how this has changed our thoughts. But he also talks about, well, as I say, he sort of parallels this, and it's almost as if he's saying that it happened before. I'm not quite sure, really, because I've only managed to read a few pages of it because it only arrived yesterday. Something else arrived yesterday, but I'm not prepared to talk about that until on Sunday's show. That's going to be a bit of a surprise. So, I should go back to my pipe. I'm going to upload this. And I hope you have a lovely day. Thank you for listening. Till next time, ta-ta.